We are going to, Be'ez Hashem, here in Eretz Yisrael, read Parshas Bichlkosai this week. Many of us know what is not just a famous comment of Rashi, but a well-known comment of the Chavetz Chaim in the beginning of this week's Parsha. Torah tells us in Bichlkosai, Teilechu, if you walk with my chukim, and Rashi says that you amelim b'Torah. And we learn in the beginning of this week's Parsha the importance of amelas, the importance of not just the mitzvah to know Torah, the mitzvah yedias haTorah, but the value of amelas b'Torah, the value of working very hard and toiling to make sure we're investing all that we can. The Chavetz Chaim famously taught, it's in the Chavetz Chaim HaTorah in this week's Parsha, Chavetz Chaim taught that we know anu amelim v'heim amelim, that we work, and also in general society, people also work. What is the added chashivas of the shetiyu amelim b'Torah? So the Chavetz Chaim writes that in secular society, in the world outside, or when you have a business, you will work, and you will get paid for your work. But the payment that you will get will be because of the result of what you created. That I worked very, very hard, I built a chair, I built a table, now I'm going to sell the table. But said the Chavetz Chaim, if I worked very, very hard, and I was trying to construct the table, I wasn't able to, it wasn't successful, all I have now is just a couple pieces of wood on the floor, I get paid nothing for it. There's a melus that's there, but I won't get a reward for it. But anu amelim umekablin schar, when we work hard in Talmud Torah, when we invest in Talmud Torah, so we are going to receive reward, even if we don't end up being as successful. Even if we aren't able to attain all that we wanted, even if I never figure out what was really going on in Tosfos, if I work really, really hard, anu amelim umekablin schar, we're going to get schar. It's a week as far as what the Parsha emphasizes. The Parsha emphasizes the importance at the beginning of Amelas B'Torah. Many of us know, I'll just say it in a way to be a little bit almost cute, that the Alter Rebbe of Chabad in one way, the Shlach HaKadosh in a bit of a different way, often spoke about the power of the Parsha to impact where a person is and how they perceive things. It's interesting to me at least that on the week of Parsha Bichlkosai, where people so often and so many muster shmuzin this time of year on Parsha Bichlkosai, as we build up towards Shavuos and not that long of a Kabbalah Satorah, that tend to focus on specifically on Melas B'Torah, that in that week falls out Lag BaOmer. And Lag BaOmer is an interesting day, because without going into the background of what Lag BaOmer entirely is about, that's a lot of discussion which we've had in past years, the day when Talmid Rabbi Akiva stopped dying, the day when the new Talmidim started learning again, Chasam Sofer, the day of Yeridus Haman, lots of explanations, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Pri Chadash, lots of explanations in terms of what happened on Lag BaOmer itself, and the Simcha of Lag BaOmer. But what we're talking about tonight is a particular element associated with Lag BaOmer, what comes in many of the Sifrei Mekubalim, Sfarim of the Mekubalim, Sifrei Kabbalah, discussions about how Lag BaOmer is the Yahrzeit of Rashbi. Now, there is some discussion, the Bnei Sassar, the Chidon, one place, speak about it as the Yahrzeit of Shimbar Yochai. There's some discussion, is that entirely clear and entirely true? Is it possible that in Reiser of Chaim Vital, there were some discussions, maybe some typos and misprints, and maybe it's not for sure it's Yahrzeit, but Bederek Klal, many assume it's the Yahrzeit of Shimbar Yochai. And many assume that even though the Gemara Nedarim tells us that typically on a Yahrzeit, it's a day which is sad, it's a day which in Halacha, this we spoke about in this room, I think, 6 years ago. Yahrzeits are often in halacha associated with tainus, with days that aren't so happy. Then the Rashbi's yahrzeit, it's associated with a certain kind of simcha. Again, and that comes from Sfarim describing what the Ari did. It comes certainly in Sifrei Chassidus, that it's a time period. It's a time period of Lag BaOmer, where we celebrate Rashbi, and we celebrate in many ways the revelation of Pnimiyas HaTorah, of Torah HaSod and Torah HaKabbalah, and the center of that celebration, B'li Shum Safek, when it comes to Lag BaOmer, the place to be is Meron. Meron's the place. Thousands and thousands and thousands of Jews going to Meron to celebrate Lag BaOmer. And there's always a question which gets raised, which is the question about Bittul Torah. Wait a minute. And there's a couple different ways of saying it, but if you look just at one application of it, in source number 2 on the sheet, Rav Yitzchak Yosef, the Sephardic chief rabbi, pointing out, I can hear it's sad to go to Meron for many, many people. But for B'nai Yeshiva, for people that otherwise would be learning regularly, So it's just straight up Bittul Torah. Or the way we would say it, Parz Bichl Kosai, Shtiu Amelim B'Torah. This is the week to talk about Amelas. It's the week of Anu Amelim V'Hem Amelim. Anu Amelim V'Kablin Schar, V'Hem Amelim V'Einim V'Kablin Schar. And how could it be on a week like this? So many people going, what about Bittul Torah, Shabo? What exactly is going on? And we know there are many big people that go to Lag BaOmer, that go to Meiron for Lag BaOmer. Many become Yechamim and Tzadikim. You have some that fly in from America to be able to be near Meiron. I don't know if he still does, but Moshe Wolfson for many years, Mashgiach Torah Das, would fly in to go to Meiron for a lot of big people that are coming in. So what's going on, and what does this tell us about Bittul Torah? What does it tell us about when a person stops learning and when a person doesn't stop learning? And I want to try to do that by first giving a little bit of an overview of the topic of Bittul Torah. And I think if we know a little bit more about Bittul Torah, if we know a little bit more about Meiron, that you put it all together and hopefully we can gain a little bit of insight. I can't say that things will be clear. That's not the goal of this slot in particular. But hopefully what we can do at least is outline some of the issues and be able to make us more aware of what's going on, and hopefully to make us more informed as we make ourselves the decisions that we ourselves must own. So let's start as follows. Bittul Torah at its core, we'll speak about three different ideas. Number one, we know that Bittul Torah is treated very severely. It's treated very seriously. The Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Beis, and one day in the Gemara, it's Be'avon Bittul Torah, that Ban and Mason, people in the Rechmana Litzlan, can pass away as a result of some who are not going to be learning as intensely. And Bittul Torah is often associated to be tied on some level with the Chiyuv of Talmud Torah. And there's a Chiyuv to learn Torah, and I have a Chiyuv to learn Torah. And at the time that I have that Chiyuv, I choose not to be learning, so that's called Bittul Torah. That's called Bittul Torah. If that's true, the first thing I have to figure out is what really the Chiyuv of Talmud Torah actually entails. If the Chiyuv of Talmud Torah is to learn all day and all night, so pretty much anything I do, Misvara, should be included in Bittul Torah. And if Bittul Torah is, according to at least the implication of one day of the Gemara, Maseches Menachos, if the Chiyuv of Talmud Torah is Kriya Shema Shacharis V'Arvis, so its Bittul Torah won't necessarily be as big of an issue. The reason why it's incredibly challenging is that for many Achronim, you have it in Or Sameach, in the very famous Kamed Hilchos Talmud Torah, you have it also in Kilas Yaakov, you have it, L'da'ati, in a incredibly significantly, I guess, different formulation of Rav Kook, also, in terms of Bittul Torah, I apologize for the poor English just now, that what you have there is the following understanding. I'll say it the way at least some describe it. It's the key to understanding what's going on and why it's so hard sometimes to figure out exactly how to relate to it. Bittul Torah may be a two-tiered chiyuv. At least one way the Or Sameach describes it. There is a minimum amount of Torah that every single person is always obligated to learn. Every day I have to learn a certain amount of Torah. There is, above and beyond that base level, the chiyuv of Talmud Torah may be an individualized chiyuv. There are people that can learn more, and there are people that can't. There are people by virtue of their health, their disposition, their talents and abilities, their capacity to sit. There are some that can do it far more than others. And the chiyuv of Talmud Torah may therefore not be equal for all people. And the Or Sameach writes, similarly in the Mesech Chachma and Parshas Ekev, that sometimes Chumash is almost like intentionally ambiguous. That sometimes there are chiyuvim where Chumash doesn't tell us exactly what you have to do, because we understand in Chumash that we can't talk in those terms. Because sometimes it has to be individualized. So Chumash says you have to learn. How much you have to learn? Well, it's really going to depend based on each person. So the first question to figure out about Bittul Torah is, what exactly is the nature of my individualized obligation? If I have obligations, I have to honor those obligations. And if I can't, I can't. That's the first point about Bittul Torah. The second point, one's going to go in the direction of Chumrah, and one's going to go in the direction of Kula. The Chumrah we spoke about years ago, I want to reference very briefly. It's a very well-known yisod in Achronim based on the Gemara Maseches Megillah, and that is the following. A person can be learning, say many of the Achronim, and still be engaging in what's referred to as Bittul Torah. How could I be learning and be engaged in Bittul Torah? So many Achronim formulate in the following way. There is quantitative and qualitative Bittul Torah. A person is not learning at all. I should be learning more minutes. I'm learning less. That's called quantitative bittul Torah. There's something else called qualitative bittul Torah. Qualitative bittul Torah is, I could have been learning at a deeper level. I could have really been learning in as deep a way as I could, and I wasn't. That's called qualitative bittul Torah. The famous ride, that's the Gemara beginning of Megillah, Mivatel in Talmud Torah, Lishmo and Mikra Megillah, we're Mivatel Torah to hear Mikra Megillah. You don't have to be the biggest Tanakh guy in the world, or even if you're not a big Tanakh guy, you got to at least be Moda that Megillah Esther is Torah. So why is it called Bittel Torah to stop learning, to hear Mikra Megillah? So the Achorim explained, because if you could be learning Torah at a deeper level, and you're stopping just to hear someone read Mikra Megillah, that's a form of Bittel Torah. That's called Bittel Torah Be'echas, not Bittel Torah Be'kamas. That's called qualitative Bittel Torah. But I think we all probably intuitively know that it has to be that there's more going on. Because we know that there are a lot of discussions about the realm of breaks or the role of breaks and the role of elements of Avodas Hashem or the impact of elements of Avodas Hashem that are not, narrowly speaking, Talmud Torah. And the question about, you know, how do I balance Bittul Torah, what's called Bittul Torah, what's not called Bittul Torah, and questions like that, it's a very significant question. I want to raise just some possibilities and some thoughts. Spent this past Shabbos in America, Stamford, Connecticut. It's actually very meaningful. The hotel was about, say, maybe a 5 to 7 minute drive away from where I proposed to my wife. It's very nice. Grew up in Connecticut, getting the first 10 years of my life. It was very, very nice to be able to be there. And I spent a lot of time talking with people. And a lot of time that conversation, interestingly enough, did not revolve solely around ketosis and nesivosis. The discussion primarily, there was some wonderful Torah, but a lot of the conversation were not about the nature of pidyon petra chamor. It wasn't the topic of conversation. I could have been learning more Torah if I stayed here. I could have been learning more Torah if I... And I think many of us intuitively can understand that there are many things that we do that we probably wouldn't call Bittul Torah at all. Some of this in the narrow center discussions about when we apply Ozek B'mitzvah and Talmud Torah, Gemara Moichat and Daf Tes, and the Meiri there and others. But there are a lot of questions. I'll give you a question that I think is worthwhile to think about. Bein Hazmanim. Bein Hazmanim is wild. The whole month of Nisan, you're like totally off. I hear Pesach. I hear the preparation like before Pesach. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of time off. What's the mucker of Bein Hazmanim? Like, where does it come from? So this we spoke about years ago, but it's really not so clear. And many of the earlier, you have Gemaras that sound like maybe something a little bit similar at some point, sometime. But you have some, the Maharal speaks very strongly against Bein Hazmanim. The Shlach HaKadosh speaks very strongly against Bein Hazmanim. Bein Hazmanim is nothing other than Bittul Torah. But Professor Mordechai Breuer, who wrote one of the more important works on the history of yeshivas, it's an unbelievable sefer with an unbelievable amount of information about yeshivas. Like, what did they learn in the time of the Gaonim in yeshiva? And what did they do Friday nights by the Chasam Sofer? And what did they do in, like, what does Shabbos look like? You know, it's like this kind of situation. They split with like a kiddush here that goes a little bit late and this there. Like, it's interesting to figure, like, what different yeshivas and how that works. So he speaks about how some of the Achronim spoke about, no, we need a little bit of a break. And the Yisod relating to Bittul Torah, which I think is so significant, is a Gemara Menachos in Daf Tzadites. And it's a Gemara Menachos that the line as famously said over is not the exact same as what the Gemara says, but the line gets quoted all the time. And that is that at times we say, Bitula Shel Torah, Bitula Zeu Kiyuma, that sometimes a person does not engage in the act of learning, but on some level it's considered to be a fulfillment of learning itself. Rashi writes the person on some level may even get schar kilu they were learning. What's the context of that Gemara? The context is Moshe Rabbeinu breaking the first luchos. Then Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, he sees Chede Egel, he breaks the luchos. The Bona Shalom says, Yashar Koach Sheshi Barta. Good job breaking that. And it's Al Yedei. If you look there at Menachos, if I look at Mekoros Nishit, Rashi, Menu Gershon, Maral, Chasemes, if I look there at some of the Mefarshim in Menachos, so part of what happened was Ayyadei Moshe Rabbeinu breaking the first Luchos, there was a significantly greater Kiyum HaTorah. There's a significantly greater experience of Talmud Torah. Number one, we got the Luchos Shnios. We got new Luchos. That new Luchos, that they seem to have worked better for us. Seem to have worked well. even though, if you look in Imri Emes, even though it happens to be as a result of breaking it, there was a time where Klal Yisrael didn't have access to Torah because the first ones are broken and the second ones haven't yet come down. So what's happening then? Elamai, there are sometimes where bitula zohi kiyuma. There are times we're not engaging in Talmud Torah. What looks like bitul Torah is actually in many ways considered to be a fulfillment of, a kiyum in some sense, of Talmud Torah. A kiyum of Talmud Torah. And along those lines, that may be what Ben Azmanim is about. Ben Azmanim, we have to learn, spend some time learning. The Stipler and Karen, the Igris on the Stipler's letters talks about that in Kol Kore. You should learn at least 4 hours a day in Ben Azmanim. Okay, each person has their own kind of a Ben Azmanim. But on some level, I have this all the time, it's called Bittul Torah, it's not called Bittul Torah. There's a concert going on. There's a concert going on. And I want to go to a concert. It is my Shana Aleph. I'm in Yeshivat Shalavim. Thursday nights, I always stayed in Yeshiva. It's here on Friday, obviously. So there was one Thursday night where I was, where there was a, there's a Yahrzeit concert for Shlomo Carlebach, and there were a lot of people playing that I very, very much liked. And I remember, like, you know, because it's your first, it's an intensive Talmud Torah experience. And the question, like, I go to the concert or don't go to the concert? That's called Bittul Torah, or that is the best example of Bitula Zohi Kiyuma? It's an amazing example of something which can give you a certain sense of a certain chiyus. Those are questions that always people struggle with in different ways. Summer. Not the question of, I need to make money and get an internship, that's one shaila. But I have a lighter schedule, maybe or maybe not. What's called Bittul Torah, you should be learning more. What's called Bitula Zohi Kiyuma? How can that, it's productive to be able, on some level, to take breaks. And this in many ways becomes one of the most tricky questions that a person has to navigate. What's my chiv in Talmud Torah and therefore Bittul Torah? What's called Bittul Torah be'echas, Bittul Torah be'kamas? And also, what's called bitula zohi kiyuma? What's called ultimately, you know, in my best interest? I always quote before Sukkos, it would be so wrong as far as time of year to quote it, if not for being Sukkah daf bezim and aleph and us learning Sukkah. It's a ha'ara that I remember a very close friend of mine many years ago had a similar kind of a question. Had to do with missing yeshiva and his normal learning in order to go to a particular event. So he consulted, if I remember correctly, he asked Moshe Weinberger, who shared with him a comment of the B'nai Yisachar. It's a comment which I think is very, very beautiful and frames a whole lot. We paskin that sukkah is diras arai. Rif, Rambam, Shulchan Aruch. We assume it's diras arai, not diras keva. Why we assume it's not diras keva? The Gemara Daf Zayin Aveis, diras keva. Lots of people hold diras keva. That is a discussion that we are most certainly not having right now. What do you do for sukkahs? So sukkahs is tzei mi diras keva. You leave your permanent dwelling place. The shovel diras arai, and you go to your temporary dwelling place. But B'nai Yisachar apparently interprets this metaphorically, al derech drush, to describe a critically important phenomenon. Life in many ways, I'll elaborate on it with a bit of a twist, but life in many ways, if you want to be successful, requires the world of kvias. Humans, as a whole, thrive with structure. No structure at all, many, many people are going to have a very hard time. The need to establish times when I do this and times when I do that. If I have a day and I have no plans, so I'll often sit at home and I won't do that much at all on that day. But if I know what my plan is for that day, we're doing this in the morning and that in the afternoon and that at night, so my day's so much more likely to be productive because I have a plan that's set. The world of kvias is incredibly important. But sometimes in life, a person has to know, tsei mi diras keva, when to break out of the world of kvias, the world of their set structure, and go into a diras arai, and spice things up a little bit. Go to a place which is not your permanent dwelling place. To go to a concert, to go out with friends, to do a variety, which is not what I'm doing every single night from 8 to 10. But it's a world of arai. It's a temporary here, a temporary there. And points out to B'nai Yisachar, I believe, that the goal after Sukkot, no one lives permanently in Diras Arai. It's Shivas Yamin. But after the Shivas Yamin, what do? You move back into your Diras Keva. And in many ways, one of the best ways of gauging the quality, when do I leave my Diras Keva to go back to go enter Diras Arai, has a whole lot more to do with what happens post-Arai. The Arai brings you back to a world of Keva that's more meaningful. It brings you back to a world of Keva that's more focused. It brings you back to a world of Keva where you're more excited, where it's more fun, where it's more enjoyable, where I can learn with greater intensity, with greater joy. Where exactly is it? Even, again, tonight we're speaking only from a pure Talmud Torah perspective. And one of the great questions is that, Bittul Torah, I get it when it's very easy. But one of the bigger questions is, when do we say, Bittul Bitula Zohi Kiyuma? And when do we say, it's just Bittul Torah? When do I say it's a Tsemi Diras Keva, B'Shevel Diras Arai? And when do I say, live in a Diras Keva? Who wants to mess around in a Diras Arai? In many ways, for me, the primary question about Meiron is this. We know that there are big people that go, and there are big people that express real hesitations. We know that it comes from Arizal, that the Hamon Am also, even those who are not going, have to be on a Rebbe going to light the Madura, that there are still a lot of Rebbeim, a lot of yeshivas, many of us have friends in that go as a bus, to be able to, the whole yeshiva, to be able to go and embrace and what's going on there in Meiron, that we know. And we know that there are many gedolim who argue, if you want to honor Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, you want to be able to enter the world of Rashbi, you want to enter the world of Rashbi, the way Rav Yosef said it, learn Rashbi's Torah. The way some tzaddikim say it, if you want to know where Rashbi is, Rashbi's alive in the Daf Gemara in front of you. And that's where you should be. We know there are different sides. We know the different sides. Rav Eliashiv, Chaim Kanievsky, or Chaim Kanievsky, quoted here in source number 3, like, yeah, the Arizal should go. What's he doing there? I don't know. That's why he's the Arizal. What am I going to do there? I have no idea. I'll go. I don't know what I'm doing. So you have some that go on both sides. For me, in many ways, one of the primary questions is, Bitula Zohi Kiyuma, this is a Tsemi Diras Keva, Shavol Diras Arai kind of a moment. Or this is the kind of moment where it's not going to do that for me. Maybe I don't have to be on the level of the Arizal. I don't be holding in fancy kavanas. But just like I was listening this afternoon, Rav Eisenstein was describing one of his trips to Meiron on Lag BaOmer. So Rav Eisenstein was talking about it. Forget the fancy kavanas. Just the klal yisrael feeling. You're dancing at 3 o'clock in the morning with lots of different kinds of Jews. Ashkenazim and Sephardim, Hasidim, everyone's all together. You have people in kippah strugas and people with long payas and long coats. Yeah, people probably aren't even wearing yarmulkes that are all there celebrating it together. So part of the question is this a Tzemi Diras Keva Arai moment? Is it Bitula Zohi Kiyuma? This enhances or doesn't enhance as much? It doesn't. For me, it's not going to do it so much. This is the kind of Diras Arai which is going to mess with my Keva. It's the kind of Diras Arai which is unnecessary or is not adding that much for me. Those are all important. Now, in truth, I should just note, the shayla going to Meiron or not based on a bunch of other issues also. If you look at Rav Avadia and Yechav Adas, there are questions about what goes on in Meiron. Okay, if you're with the Bayana Rebbe lighting on the top of the tzniyah, you're lighting the bonfire, that's one thing. But outside are there questions of tzniyas, is it appropriate, inappropriate, where am I going to go? That's one kind of a shayla. The Chasam Sofer has very famously some hesitations about Lag BaOmer. Do we really establish days like this that don't commemorate a miracle? Do days like that? Or, as Chasam Sofer pointed out in a bunch of places, I'm very fond of this Chasam Sofer because I think it's intriguing. Chasam Sofer said, is there not something wrong on some level that Aliyah L'Regel, which some Achronim, you have hints in the Rana Tainus and other places, of this Aliyah L'Regel, to go to Shalos Regalim to Yerushalayim, people aren't doing? There's more people going to Meiron on Lag BaOmer than to Yerushalayim? That what about Yerushalayim? Chasam Sofer said very famously in drushas and tshuvas in Perush HaTorah, I think it's in all three of those, towards most parts of Emor, the tshuvas are there, drushas also, that there was an earthquake in Tzfas. There was an earthquake in Tzfas. And Chasam Sofer famously said that part of the reason why there was an earthquake there was because, much as everyone's moving, Talmidim Baal Shem Tov are coming to Eretz Yisrael, and they're moving to northern Israel. But what about the Kedusha of Yerushalayim? What about the holiness of Yerushalayim? And it says Chasam Sofer that what's going on here, I'm from the Misnagdim in this. I'm from the don't do that. Because there are other issues at play. Bittul Torah is one. There's a question of Yerushalayim versus Tzfas. Question of the nature of the Simcha. You have questions about Tznias. But the primary one, at least as far as what we're talking about, is undoubtedly the one that relates to, on some level, Bittul Torah. I saw a great formulation today to this question. Rav Waxman, a WhatsApp to a Talmud of his. How I got access to that is not because of some, I assume this is obvious, he sent it to me. When I asked him, can you send out that this is like the sheer topic? So I was talking to him about what he tells people, so he sent me this. It was not like some stalkerish, like, I have access to his WhatsApp. I don't even know if that would be, I mean, maybe it'd be fine, I have no idea. Good morning, blank name. I know it was two, he took out the name, so I figured I would take out the name also. A few years ago, one of the guys in Yeshiva asked me about going to Meiron. I said to him, the guys often ask me this question, it's a very difficult question for me to answer, because from what I have seen, some guys benefit from going and some guys benefit from not going. Turned out that Rav Asher Weiss was in Yeshiva that week, and I told him that I would ask Rav Asher. I told Rav Asher my dilemma, and he responded, in fact, some boys will benefit from going, and some boys will benefit from staying in Yeshiva and not going. It sounds simplistic until you realize that, like, simplistic or cliche things are often just MS. It could just be MS. Some people should and some people shouldn't. And a lot of the avodah that I have to engage in is figuring out if I should or if I shouldn't, of what category of person I'm really in. We know that there are well-known rabbanim that go, well-known rabbanim that don't go, and well-known rabbanim that encourage others to go, and well-known ones that don't. And part of the question for me is figuring out where I'm at in terms of my understanding of self, and for me to be able to own the decision by talking with people who can help me, by talking with people who can guide me, and to be able to do that. In short, sort of Waxman, you can do your research about what trip entails and what goes on. Once you've done that, you have to decide as to whether or not you think this will be beneficial for you. I think that every person is different, and I'm sorry that I can't give you a more clear answer. Or, to say it differently, he gave a very clear answer. The kind of answer which a person has to take ownership of as far as their own decisions. And that's a healthy thing. To look into things and to consult with people and to decide on your own. Is this good for you? Is this not good for you? What I will say is as follows. I'm often moved by the following. I shared with some of the guys. I remember there are always guys I know, at least in my shir, who go to Meiron for Lag BaOmer. And as it's probably abundantly clear, some guys should go and some guys shouldn't go from my perspective. So, you know, you definitely have some that go, and you have many guys that don't go. One of the things that I find to be incredibly inspiring is there are people that made the choice. This happens every year, and I find it to be very, very moving, that there really isn't that much of a need to choose. You have guys who go, I've choose a little bit, but they go at night, they're in Meiron, 3 o'clock in the morning, and they are back here by 9:30 for morning Seder. What does that morning Seder look like? So I'll tell you the truth, from a pure Bittul Torah Be'echas perspective, is that the highest quality of learning intellectually? I can't tell you intellectually that was the best Seder any of those guys ever had. Can I tell you that from a statement about what's important to them, from a statement about, you know, where they're at, that I believe that Klape Shmaya, if people like that, those that can pull that off and not get sick, can pull that off and know they're going to crash 1:30, you know, they're going to get a couple hours in. The people that do that, can I say that that is something which, from my perspective, for the ones that should be going, and they come back next morning, and they fight through it, and it's a hard morning Seder. And during Shir, you could tell the beautiful sight of a guy that is so tired and trying to stay awake. The beautiful sight of a person that's giving it his all. When you're able to see that happening, we don't know how things, what's Nechshav, Kalape, Milo, how things are perceived, you know, in front of the Ribono Sha'olam. But if I were wagering money, for those that are going and it's their style, and they're able to go because that's their decision and they're going forever, they'll speak to their own rebbeim to find out what the yeshiva's policy is. I don't know, and I didn't want to know before speaking about it, so I can speak about it, you know, without knowing. And to be able, I don't mean that so seriously, and to be able to make whatever decision you happen to make, and many of us should not be going, and many of us probably should be, or at least some of us should be, and to be able to do it in a way which is such a powerful statement to Rashbi. This day is not Hutra. It's a day in which I'm Tovea more of myself. It's not a day of less, it's a day of more. It's a day which celebrates Panimiyas HaTorah, which celebrates a revelation of the inner nature of things, of the deeper elements of so much of our Torah. And we should be zocha wherever you fall out on the Lag BaOmer question, to do so in a way as we're in Sfiras HaOmer, if Talmidei Rabbi Akiva died because they were not Nohag and Kavod Zeh Bazeh, the oddest thing to do is to not be Nohag Kavod Zeh Bazeh on the day they finally stop being nifter. I can't understand how a person could do that. And the time of Firas HaOmer, of Yichan Sham Yisrael Negad Ahar, before Kabbalah Satorah, of Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, the one thing I highly recommend of whatever you do is to be noe kavod zebazeh in the best way possible. That is undoubtedly the best way to honor Rashbi and to prepare for Kabbalas HaTorah. Shkayakai, have a wonderful night.